What is there to say about what took place with the Atlanta Falcons in Week 15? Well, we'll try to put it into words. Is there anything we can learn from Stefon Diggs' slow finish to the season? And who are Andy and I panicked about heading into Week 16? All that and more on the Week 16, the People's Panic Meter. Let's get into it. It's Tuesday, December 19th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day. A hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that is, you know who it is. It's Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, buddy?
I'm good. It was a relatively, you know, given the time of year, a relatively stress-free weekend. Anytime you can load up on Sam Laporta touchdowns on a Saturday and not really have to stress on a Sunday, that's a good weekend.
Yeah, I'm sure you were living easy. I got Sam Laporta'd in a couple of spots. So on the same token there, I entered Sunday feeling pretty stress-free as well. Because I'm like, oh, this thing's over. I don't need to worry about this.
Whatever gets you there, yeah.
Yeah, listen, I don't have to worry about this. This is probably not going to work out for me personally. Even Christian McCaffrey and Brock Purdy, the stack in the Dynasty League wasn't enough to get past J.J. Zacharyson throwing hammers at me with Sam Laporta, St. Brown, even Jaden Reed. I mean, betrayed by Jaden Reed. Unbelievable.
Yeah, but that is a betrayal. Who's been more in Jaden Reed's corner than you?
Oh, maybe J.J. Zacharyson. Unfortunately, yeah. maybe J.J. So I think we were two of the guys, at least in the dynasty circles, that were highest on Jaden Reed as prospects. So it is only, I mean, I don't know what wrong I did in this life or the past life to deserve the fact that the only other person who was higher on Jaden Reed or as high on Jaden Reed as a prospect happens to be the person that rosters him in the dynasty league that we're in together. I don't know what I did to deserve that, but I guess I deserved it.
It's a little easier to go out when you're taken out by a player that like you bang the table for, right? Like
that's true.
If you'd gotten, not that this was ever going to happen, but if you would have gotten run out of the playoffs because Jerry Jeudy went off, that's a really tough scene.
Yeah, imagine. what a cute little fantasy world you just put together there. None of that is possible. But no, you're right, because at the same time, people are sending me DMs and tweets. Oh, Jaden Reed. Shout out Jaden Reed. I drafted Jaden Reed because of you. I'm like, that's nice. Jaden Reed is currently knifing me in the fantasy football playoffs. But I'm glad you all are happy out there. And that's really, again, what this show is all about. It's not about me. It's not about Andy. Andy does kind of make it about himself sometimes. But it's not really about us. It is about you, the people. That's what we've done every year on the Tuesday show. In the fantasy postseason, we're doing something a little bit different. And we've already started kind of get into it with not your problems, Andy. You don't have any problems. With my problems here to start the show. We are introducing the Fantasy Forensic Files. We asked you all, the people, to send in your video rants, your screen grabs, your bad beats of how your season ended this week, if you did end up getting eliminated this week. You all delivered. Jaden Reed ended it for me. Some other people may have ended it for you. So we're going to share your rants and then dive into how it happened and what lessons we can potentially learn from your crushing fantasy defeats here at the end of the 2023 season. We'll start with, Andy, who else could it have been? Arthur Smith truly wrote his masterpiece, his magnum opus in terms of his, anti-fantasy football stuff. It all came together at a perfect time. And Kyle sends in this video that really does sort of sum it all up perfectly. Let's hear what he had to say.
Arthur Smith needs to be fired into the sun. How? Against the Carolina Panthers. Oh, but it gets better. Carolina Panthers, in a drenchial downpour, does Bijan Robinson get outscored by Tyler Algier, by Cordell Patterson? Oh, but it gets better. Even though I don't have these players, I gotta talk about it. Drake London doesn't get a catch until the final drive. It doesn't matter how far any of these Atlanta Falcons players fall. They could fall to the 10th round next year. Arthur Smith will find out that they have fallen to the 10th round and be like, we need to make sure that they are not even worth 10th round picks, because that's what he does. He actively dislikes the fantasy football community and ensures that no one has any fun watching the Atlanta Falcons. And the fact that they lost against the Carolina Panthers is the funniest thing. And if you don't get fired after that, I don't know. This guy has, he's got something. He's got something on the owner. I don't know what it is, if he's still here. I will not be drafting Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts, or Drake London next year, unless that man is out of my life.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of people are waking up feeling that way, that they are idiots for, you know, for going all potential warning about drafting Atlanta Falcons players, and that they're never doing it again, Andy. I feel like a lot of people are waking up feeling that way. Like I said, it was a masterpiece from Arthur Smith in week 15.
Yeah, on the one hand, I want, you know, I would like to see what it looks like under a different head coach, because I want to know what kind of player Bijan Robinson and Kyle Pitts and Drake London can become. On the other hand, Arthur Smith is so good in terms of providing content throughout a fantasy season that I kind of don't want to see him go. But obviously a masterpiece of a game from Smith, given what he is apparently trying to produce for us each week. I just went back and not long before we started the pod, I looked at the play-by-play of that game. Matt, the first four plays, Tyler Allgeier, Tucker Fisk, Tyler Allgeier again, and Cordarrelle Patterson. And then we were off and running, right? Like, we're not even messing around with any of your like elite playmakers on the opening drive. Not, like, all due respect to Tyler Allgeier, I think he's a good player. Tucker Fisk, that's like the number four tight end on this team. Absolutely wild. And there was obviously the score, the one score that Atlanta delivered, the Cordarrelle Patterson touchdown, preceded by a play in which we had faked a pass to Bijan Robinson. So literally using Bijan as a decoy and hitting Jonnu Smith for like one of the only big games that Atlanta had, in a game in which they only delivered like 200 total net yards. And you were like, wow, man, that's everything that Arthur Smith dreams of right there. He's using his, you know, all that draft capital as a pure decoy to set up something for like the number two tight end on his team. It was an absolute masterpiece of Arthur Smithian pain.
Okay, so all that said, I don't want to be the two guys on here in terms of like what happened, what can we learn from this? I don't want to just be two fantasy blowhards, like, you know, banging on Arthur Smith because he didn't get the ball to Bijan Robinson, because like, oh, it's a fantasy football problem. And like, my fantasy football guys didn't perform, even though, look, that's what the show is about. Our fantasy football guys didn't perform. Like, you lost to the damn Panthers. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, the Carolina Panthers, you scored 7 points against the worst team in football. And Andy, I think this was, like, not just a fitting end for, okay, again, this guy has given he's given the middle finger to the fantasy community, like, publicly before. And look, I really don't care about that stuff. Like, that doesn't bother me one bit, okay? Like, every coach in the league can hate fantasy football for all I care. It doesn't matter. It doesn't bother me personally. I lose 0 seconds of sleep off of it. But I think the great justice here is that this really revealed, I think, just shined a light as bright as you possibly could, that this team building act has been a failure under Arthur Smith through 3 seasons now. And by the way, I'm going to say all this, and I'm just going to let people know now, I don't know that I'm fully on board with like they can fire Arthur Smith and that's fine, but I don't know that they have to fire Arthur Smith. I think they can give it another year, but again, to run into the season with just Desmond Ridder as your starting quarterback was a failure. The fact, like, again, it's not a fantasy football discussion. You're not maximizing players that the organization has spent significant resources to acquire. I mean, Bijan, you can tell, is not playing with confidence, probably because he knows he's in this weird committee and his coach has like some of these galaxy brain usages for him, like as a passing game person. Yo, just have him run the ball, right? And Where do you think the Atlanta Falcons offense ranks in rushing success rate this year?
Oh, there's a probably not Well, maybe not as high as it would have last year. I don't know. Are they must be up there, right?
They're 27th.
Oh, no.
27th in the league in rushing success rate. In EPA per rush, they're 26th. Okay, their drop back game, just from a success rate standpoint, is actually better than their ground game. They're 13th in the NFL in drop back success rate. And, you know, maybe like, you can pick nits at metrics, all that type of stuff. But the Falcons' run game has actively gotten worse this year after acquiring Bijan Robinson, which was supposed to sort of be the cherry on top to take it to the next level. Like, this is not a fantasy football thing. This team, what they wanted to be on offense, they've failed to do it.
Yeah, they also, you know, it's not like we can't say that there weren't, you know, quarterbacks available in the offseason too. That's the other thing. Like, you know, if maybe it's debatable whether Lamar Jackson was ever really available, but my God, like Atlanta should have pushed everything into the middle of the table to try to get him. It's weird that they were out on him. You know, there were a number of like franchise altering quarterbacks that were available in the offseason. It, you know, it's their job to know, even though we saw only a limited amount of Desmond Ridder last year, and you could have talked yourself into him being capable as a game manager, I guess, like even like in the rosiest possible scenario. But I mean, you had to know that there were better available options, and you have in all other aspects, you have this sort of ready-made team that surely someone else with a better quarterback could, you know, take and I mean, they should be a playoff team. I don't know. Like it doesn't seem crazy to me that this team, as loaded with talent as they are in that division, man, we should be talking about them as a playoff team.
Yeah. I think again, misevaluating who you needed Desmond Ridder to be is a big part of this too. Right. Because as you said, certainly they could do, like a game manager type of quarterback, if everything else was perfect around him on this roster, probably could have gotten it done. But like we just said, things aren't so sticky year to year that you can have a great run game last year and then you're just going to add a great running back and it's going to take it to the next level. It just doesn't work like that. And also, like, watch Desmond Ridder play football. Like he's not like a game manager type. He puts the ball in harm's way. He's a turnover prone player. He has bad ball placement and he is late on throws. He's not like a cookie cutter kind of paint between the lines type of guy. So again, I think that was a misevaluation that comes back down to it. And again, maybe Arthur Smith gets a fourth year. I think that's fine. I don't know about you, Andy. I think that what I learned from this situation, and I'm thinking about this from like a Drake London standpoint too. And, you know, Kyle mentioned Drake London, like with a wide receiver specifically. And I think with any, this can apply to any players. I'm going to be counting next year how many ifs I have to say to make a player's case. Like, I think with Drake London, well, I know Drake London is good. So if the offense opens up, if Arthur Smith, you know, kind of gets out of his own way, and if Desmond Ridder is good, then I think Drake London could be like a breakout star. Like there are bold predictions from me on the internet that Drake London is going to get 12,000 yards this year. Let me tell you what, he ain't not going to get 12,000 yards. Bold prediction, not going to happen. So that's a lot of ifs. Like, I think if you have to make three ifs for a player in a situation, that's not a good sign.
Yeah, no, that's a really great point. And as I think about the division now, like, I don't know, what does it look like if Baker Mayfield is the quarterback for the Atlanta Falcons, right? Like that's probably all you need. A little bit better than a game manager, pretty good season in progress here from Baker. I don't know, just a staggering disappointment all around. And again, sometimes it's just as simple as the best offenses and the smartest coaches don't get in their own way and they funnel the ball to their best players. The things that work, they do it again and again. And we're not getting enough of that out of Atlanta.
No, we are definitely not. All right, just to magnify what Arthur Smith cost people, we did get one submission from Devin D. He titled his email, "Don't Put Bijan in a Corner." He lost 101.62 to 103.54, less than 2 points. And he had Bijan on his team and he got him minus 0.110. I mean, that is just absolutely brutal in week 15, first round of the fantasy playoffs.
So this is the other thing, like putting, again, it's not a fantasy football argument. Putting Bijan on the shelf and forgetting about him. holstering him when after a fumble is just the most old school, high school-y thing to do. Yeah. It's not like that's not serving the interests of the team. That's not helping anyone. It's not like Bijan is sitting there learning a valuable lesson. He knew he wasn't supposed to fumble. Right? It happens. It's like sports happen. Just a brutal thing to see. And it's also not like, I don't know. Are we calling Bijan Robinson a fumbler? Like, is this like a part of his game that has to be punished away? I don't think so. I didn't view this as like a last straw scenario for Bijan Robinson. So that was
three fumbles on the year. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. That's not like, okay, I'm done with you. We can't play you anymore. I don't know. Just a wild sort of old school decision that absolutely doesn't need to be made.
No, definitely not. A very strange decision made there. All right. We have email screen grabs from Milan P, who says, quote, "I had a pretty unlucky week 15 rollout, led the league in points, squeaked into the playoffs, only to have all my studs the injury bed. He had Tyreek Hill, Chris Olave, and Keenan Allen all out the first week of the postseason. Yikes. Look, I don't there's no lessons learned from this one, right? It's just like, hey, this stuff happens, and sometimes when it rains, it pours. Like, I have plenty of Chris Olave and Nico Collins teams, and I'm like, well, great. What am I doing now? Also, some of those teams happen to have like Michael Pittman and, you know, like George Pickens on one of them. Like, great. What do I do? Like, do I wait for Chris Olave? I just got to play guys on Saturday. I get it. This is very frustrating. I don't really know what to say to Milan and others who suffered through this, but man, it does suck when it all happens at once.
I guess one thing I would say to this person is to not feel like, you know, anything happened that you need to adjust to next year, right? Like, the man, good process by you, honestly. Like, Tyreek Hill was one of the absolute, and still is, if you had a bye last week, like Tyreek Hill, one of the absolute right answers in fantasy. Keenan Allen was one of the absolute right answers in fantasy. He's having like the best damn season of his career. So like, I don't know, this is a good team, and you just got hit by some really bad luck at a terrible time, because there's obviously, you might be able to squeak by replacing one of these guys, but you can't lose all three and expect to get a win against a good fantasy opponent in the playoffs, obviously. So you can feel terrible about this, but I would actually feel like I made a bunch of good decisions, and I don't think I'd change anything up if I were you next year.
Yes. Look, Andy and I are paid to talk about it, okay? But I think we can both admit there's a good bit of luck involved here.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have bad luck, okay? Like, I think anybody that shies away from the fact that fantasy football is, there's some luck involved, there's some fortune involved, there's like, hey, you're gambling on stuff, right? You're gambling on things to happen. Obviously, you can make educated decisions and you can have a great process, but sometimes you just run into a bit of bad luck here. And, you know, hopefully you aren't super frustrated by it. Hopefully, you know, your friends and family don't hate you for the entire week because you're bitter about it. I hope that we can, you know, be zen and come to terms with it, because this just is what it is, man.
I'm almost reluctant to tell it because it's maybe not my story to tell, but I'm in a league. This is a keeper league, 16 teams. It's commissioned by a mutual friend, Chris Harris. And one of the teams in there, managed by Jimmy McCormick, is the single greatest roster I've ever seen. I've been in this league for over 20 years. I've never seen a roster like this. He assembled a team. We started our playoffs last week, okay, in week 14. 16 teams. Jalen Hurts, Tyreek Hill, Christian McCaffrey, Mike Evans. I'm forgetting like three guys who are really good, right? Like, it's just, it's an all pro squad from this league. And he traded future picks to get it, traded all kinds of stuff to get it. It's an impeccable roster. And they just got stomped a week ago, right? Because Tyreek gets hurt in that game. It's like the rare game in which Christian McCaffrey doesn't go nuclear. Jalen Hurts has a quiet day. Mike Evans doesn't score. Like, perfect storm. The wildest stuff can happen. Like, you could do everything right, and now poor Jimmy's going into next year. I think he's traded away like his first five picks in the draft, six picks in the draft, to assemble this roster. I don't know. Like, stuff like that happens. It literally should have been the greatest team in the history of this league, and it's just going to be a story that we tell one another for the next 10 years.
I mean, perfect segue to our next submission from Ryan A, who sends in a screen grab and email titled, "Who killed your season?" It's so hard to pick just one. Writing, just a historically bad showing from everyone involved. And of course it happened in the first round of the fantasy playoffs. Signed, a stunned fantasy footballer. A couple of highlights here. Ryan had negative points from Bijan Robinson, of course. He had 3.7 from Brandon Ayuk and 4.8 from Stephon Diggs. And this one stung me personally too, pal. 7.8 from Michael Pittman. By the way, as we're taping this, I think the Steelers safety, Demonte KZ, who had the hit on Michael Pittman, is suspended for the rest of the season. So, that was a brutal one. And obviously, like, there's nothing you can do about that, right? Guy gets injured mid-game on a brutal hit like that. It is what it is. And it just sucks when it all lines up again. The same, like, not even the injury part of it, just Ayuk and Diggs have quiet games and Pittman leaves at midway through. I mean, nothing else to say other than just throw your hands up and shrug at it.
You can't even really blame Stephon. Like, I know people have been a little bit, they've been anxious with Stephon Diggs lately, even though, you know, he had a touchdown in that Eagles game. He's getting a bunch of targets, whatever, but they barely threw. Like, they barely had to throw. Just weird, like a product of a game plan that was great, that worked spectacularly in real life. I think he was the most targeted Bills receiver, right? But it was only like five targets. The ball
barely
went
there. He led the team with 48 receiving yards.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, a bummer, I guess. But Diggs is still a great player. Pittman, a great player. What a brutal hit. Like, not only a brutal hit, but honestly, a brutal throw. Let him right into it. Everything about that play was super ugly. And I hope Pittman is okay going forward, because he's had a phenomenal season. Like, this is another one where, like, I don't know, you did a bunch of stuff right here. Like, Ayuk was a great pick. Diggs is a great player. Pittman, phenomenal season. And Pittman, there was, you know, you come into the, like, during draft season, I don't know, there were different takes to be had on Michael Pittman, right? Because we had a bit of an unknown quantity at quarterback. What is the offense going to look like? Are they even going to be passing? Is there even any opportunity for Michael Pittman to be a volume receiver? And he's been, you know, he's exceeded even like the most bullish expectations. It's been a great year.
Yeah, Michael Pittman and Brandon Ayuk are two of the right answers receiver this year. All of these guys that we're talking about here, Diggs is receiver 9 on the season. Michael Pittman's 12. Brandon Ayuk is 13. You know, like, these are two guys that could be had at values because of the uncertainty around, you know, in the situation, right? I mean, Pittman is a great example. And yeah, I think I probably was the highest on Pittman among basically any fantasy analyst this offseason. I had him at receiver 23, 24. So he's obviously outkicked even that. And, you know, some of this is the Gardner Minshew stuff. Dalton and I talked about it last week, but he's definitely outkicked those optimistic expectations. And he was probably on his way to a monster game against the Pittsburgh Steelers before that hit happened. So that just is what it is. With Ayuk, look, he has his, and again, you know, if you are feeling it with Ayuk, you know, I am feeling it, because I have so much Brandon Ayuk. 3.7 points is his lowest output of the season. It just, it comes at a bad week. Of course, a week when they also just, you know, drum up on the Arizona Cardinals too. I will say with Diggs, I think there is actually a lesson learned here. Not that, like, okay, not enough of one that you weren't going to damn start Stephon Diggs or anything like that. Of course, you're playing Stephon Diggs, and he could go ham. He could go ham next week, 2 weeks. The Bills could win the Super Bowl on the back of like big Stephon Diggs performances. That's all on the table. I will say, though, the Bills are a team that have changed and morphed identities so often this season. And that is something to remember, that we come into the season with like clear vision of what we think the Buffalo Bills are going to be. They're going to throw more than anybody. You know, they're going to be one of these teams that's pushing for the league lead in pass attempts, right? But at the same time, they really showed a lot of signs and signals, Andy, that they didn't want to be that team, that they wanted to refurbish their run game. I never expected it to be 25 carries from James Cook at the end of the season. That was not what I saw coming, but like, they draft Osiris Torrance, you know, a big hulking guard. They obviously wanted to play in a bunch of 12 personnel with Dawson Knox as the blocker in those scenarios. You know, they have a fullback on the roster. They signed Damian Harris and Latavius Murray to give him oomph at running back. Obviously, again, like I said, I didn't think it'd be 25 carries for James Cook, but not that anybody would have seen, oh, the Cowboys get blown out by the Bills and Josh Allen has 90 something passing yards coming. But you could see that, like, all right, the Bills were sort of morphing and changing away from the team that was just throw the ball all over the yard with Stephon Diggs and Josh Allen.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I don't know. I didn't see that game plan coming. I don't know where I had James Cook in my ranks for week 15, but he wasn't an afterthought, but he was probably like RB 20, 21, 22. It wasn't great, but absolutely phenomenal game. And I loved Allen's quote after the game about how he just felt like he was the kid who got an A on the group project, even though he didn't do anything, right? Like which is not exactly accurate. He was great, but in a limited role, in a limited capacity, almost had a cameo role in the game. And you're right. Their ability to sort of reinvent the offense week to week and on the fly has been incredibly impressive. I thought that was going to be a competitive game. I think everybody thought that was going to be a competitive game, and it was a murder scene early.
Yeah, they fired their offensive coordinator midseason. That's definitely an identity Wild. Change midway through. Final email submission here, not to be outdone. JJ, not JJ Zacharyson, J-A-Y, J, first initial of the last name, titled his email, "My entire team sunk me." He goes on to share his roster with commentary. Josh Allen, 13 pass attempts. Jamar Chase, injured. Zach Moss, injured. Puka was blocking the entire game. Najee Harris, straight trash. I mean, that's kind of harsh. Stephon Diggs, I don't even know what to say. Tony Pollard, Cowboys are a smokescreen. look, some of these, like we said, Cowboys are a smokescreen. Some of these, again, we talked about injuries. It is what it is. But any of these other guys, you know, we talked Josh Allen and the Bills. Any of these other guys stick out as someone that maybe we can learn something from, Andy?
Yeah, this one's funky because, like, you could survive individually any one of these games, but all of them together, yeah, that's a little bit rough, right? Like, we got a little something from Moss before he checked out. That's, by the way, that's another situation. Same team. We were talking about Pittman earlier and how he was going to have a monster game. Man, Zach Moss is going to have a monster game Both Goodson and Sermon were like basically gave you like 80 scrimmage yards and looked great. Like, Moss was going to get all of that. That was going to be like 180 or 200 yard game out of Zach Moss. I'm sure I don't need to tell you. I know you've got a fair amount of Zach Moss. So that's brutal. Pollard, Pollard looked fine, right? Pollard was like 11 carries for 50 some yards, but the run got away from Dallas so early because that game was so not competitive. I think in a back and forth game, in the sort of game that we might have imagined, it would have been perfectly fine for Tony Pollard, but man, that was not the script he needed at all.
No, I mean, yeah, that's just one that got away from you. I do think we can obviously look back on Tony Pollard's season and think, you know, he wasn't even a guy that I would have considered like a must start in this game, because that's how far his season had gotten away from him. And there's a lot of lessons to learn there. You know, one, drafting a running back coming off of an injury can be a little precarious. I do think that was yada yada way too much in the offseason. Probably guilty of that myself. I think we obviously took a big leap with like, well, he was so explosive behind Zeke. Obviously, he'll just erupt in the starting job, but that's just not how the position works. And we see examples like that all the time. He's definitely going to stick out as one that really, you know, is kind of a loud example of this. But yeah, I think he's definitely somebody that I think we can learn a lot from the Tony Pollard experience, even if, for it to come to this sort of end for people that had him on their team is pretty disappointing. But again, Andy, like, 11 carries for 52 yards. Tony Pollard's got a lot of games that are in that neighborhood.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's funny looking back because the first two rounds of drafts, honestly, just an utter minefield. And I don't know, like, just as I'm thinking about like the early rounds of drafts right now, I don't know that there was other than like specifically targeting Tyreek or Christian McCaffrey, I don't know that there was a draft philosophy that really hit in this particular season, right? Because like, if you went zero RB, then you might have ended up with Justin Jefferson or Jamar Chase, or like, Cooper Kupp has been fine over the last couple of weeks, right? But that wasn't a winning play all season. Devontae Adams hasn't carried anybody, right? Like, the everybody's complaining about Steph Diggs. Like none of that went well. If you went, you know, aggressively after running backs early, then one of them was probably Tony Pollard, which hasn't gone particularly well. Nick Chubb gets hurt. Whole bunch of guys get hurt, right? Like, they're just If you went quarterback early, that probably didn't go well. We've been talking about those guys all year. Like, Patrick Mahomes has not been clearly the number one where you drafted him. Hurts is obviously slowing down a bit at the end of the season. Like, there just hasn't been, of all the sort of name brand draft philosophies, there hasn't been one that has really stood out above all the others this year.
No, I agree. I think we'll end up seeing some zero RB teams that do really well. Of course, that means you got to pick up the right guys. You know, you got to have your Zach Moss run. You got to have this type of stuff. But listen, I mean, you got to pick up Kyren Williams off waivers, for God's sakes. Like, you know, that's the winning. Draft Christian McCaffrey, pick up Kyren Williams off waivers. You win your league.
Or draft Raheem Mostert in like the 10th round or whatever. Right. But I just feel like success this year is going to be so specifically tied to a small number of players and not really to any sort of approach to drafting.
Yeah, and I mean, people get really irritated at you when you say, oh, the best strategy is just to draft the right players. But, like, the best strategy is just to draft the right players, right? I mean, it's hard to know who the right players are. Like, I don't know who all the right players are. Andy doesn't know who all the right players are. Nobody does. That's not a 100% hit rate strategy, but neither is anything else.
I guess I will say the one thing, and now, like, as I say the names of some of the players who were sort of league winners and deciding factors this year, I guess maybe one of the big takeaways is if you just throw out everything that you know about a player's injury history on draft day, that's probably a better approach, right? Because we're talking about, like, right at the tight, if you go to the fantasy MVPs in Yahoo's game right now, you go to the research tools, you look at the fantasy MVPs, the guys at the top are Raheem Mostert and Christian McCaffrey, like two players who had, you know, for a ton of people would have said that they had, you know, a million injury red flags coming into the year. I'm definitely not drafting Mostert. He's no way I'm getting more than five games out of him. You know, like, Tua has been there for us every week all season, and he was a huge injury worry. Like, if you just ignored injury history and injury concerns coming into the year, that probably was the right approach.
Keenan Allen's up there too, and he's injured now, by the way. So yeah. I mean, you could definitely say, oh, well, great, that proves that, you know, sometimes you do got to care about injuries. But he's up there. He's the current top five in terms of MVPs in the top 500 at Yahoo public leagues that Andy's referencing here. Raheem Mostert is number one. Tyreek Hill is number two. Christian McCaffrey is number three. Mike Evans is number four, and Keenan Allen is number five. I definitely think Mike Evans and Keenan Allen.
That is such an old group. That's
exactly what I was going to say, is that this has definitely been a year, like a comeback year from, like, hey, don't count out the old guys.
Yeah.
We've gotten so obsessed, and I am putting my hands up here as I am guilty of this, and everybody is guilty of this. I mean, let me tell you what, Andy, the most clicked on, you know, time at Reception Perception, the most, like, when most people are coming to that site is when I drop the second year receivers or the rookie receivers, right? People are obsessed with younger players. Nobody gives a damn about the Mike Evans profile. Okay. Nobody's clicking on the Mike Evans profile. Nobody's clicking on DeAndre Hopkins. Well, Hopkins different because he was a free agent this year, but, you know, we just go new model, new model, new model. We get obsessed with it. Like, we want to capture the jump from these young players, right? Especially at receiver. We've talked so much, but the last year spent a lot of digital ink on hyping up second year receivers, because when it hits, it can hit big. But I mean, then you sometimes get guys that just don't work out, or that, you know, Garrett Wilson, it's hard to, you can't blame Garrett Wilson. That's not his fault.
No.
But, you know, there are other times, like, we get over our skis with Christian Watson. We get over our skis with George Pickens, or like Elijah Moore the year before, or Rashad Bateman, and, you know, injuries and whatever. But sometimes we do get over our skis with these players. It's just like, damn, that's Mike Evans there. And, like, I know he's got Baker Mayfield, but, like, again, fourth most valuable player in Yahoo public leagues, like, right now.
Yeah. What's the percentage on Raheem Mostert, by the way? I bet it's crazy.
62.2%.
Yeah, that's just wild. Like, that individual player is on over 60% of the best 500 fantasy rosters. That's crazy. Of course, the thing about Raheem Mostert is you took him so late that, like, you can have Raheem Mostert and Tyreek Hill. You can have, like, in the way that you can't have Christian McCaffrey and Tyreek Hill on a roster, you can have Raheem Mostert with any of these guys. Amazing season by him.
Yeah, we should definitely come back at the end of the season and break down some of this page and do more, like, takeaways and stuff like that from some of these guys, because I think we're getting some early formulation here with these older guys. But let's move into our social submissions here. Starting off with Javier on Twitter, who says that the Bills decided to have a good run game since OJ. I think what he meant to say is the Bills decided to have a good run game for the first time since OJ Simpson, the week I'm going against James Cook in the playoffs. He has a crying meme of the Northwestern child from the March Madness a few years back. If you're watching the YouTube, I'm sure you're seeing it up there. Yeah, pretty funny stuff, of course. James Cook, man, what a performance. And I mean, like, that I was talking second Chris Harris mentioned here, I was talking with him this morning on his show just about like watching James Cook, and that was just something like we've never seen James Cook do. We've seen hints and signs and signals of it lately, but we've never seen him handle 25 carries and be like a bell cow back. So my question to you, Andy, less about like a lessons learned here, because hey, Javier, don't play James Cook the week he's going to go off. I can't give you anything, you know, on that. What do we think about James Cook going forward, both this year and like maybe in dynasty years to come, that type of thing?
He looked like the best version of Dalvin Cook, right? Like he was patient when he needed to be patient and urgent when he needed to be urgent. An almost flawless game. Really impressive. He's always going to run into the problem of, you know, Josh Allen being the best goal line rushing option for that team, at least for the foreseeable future. So that's a little bit of a thing. But man, James Cook has a chance to play his way into at least the early second round, late first round. I don't know. I don't know where James Cook is going to go. We're only a few weeks removed from everybody kind of feeling like James Cook, oh man, he got a lot of buzz. That was kind of a bust. But if he finishes the season with a run of games that looks anything like what he's coming off, he's going to play his way into a top 15 ADP, I would think.
Yeah. I could see some like, hey, is this a Tony Pollard type situation? Like we see it in limited glimpses, but you don't see him fully prove that he's like a feature back. But hey, if the Bills make the playoffs and like he continues to do this stuff and he stacks like that much of a performance, I mean, he's definitely going to creep up there for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely phenomenal game. I don't even like, by the way, like this Javier, like just glossed over the Thurman Thomas era. He was pretty good. Like you don't have to go all the way back to OJ Simpson to find a good Bills back. That's a little bit unfair. They've had some okay guys.
Yeah, I mean, maybe a little bit unfair. Brandon on Twitter said, I faced Gardner Minshew, Terry McLaurin, and Chris Godwin. I thought I had a free win in the first round. I mean, I don't know what you want to say about these guys. I will just say, man, Gardner Minshew, I feel like a hater, but he's just not that good. But this offense is just so well constructed. Yeah. They run like, I don't know, it feels like they run 10 plays, okay? It's the same like RPO stuff over and over again. And now they're running it, you know, with the damn preseason squad against the Steelers. DJ Montgomery, I don't even know who that is. Okay. Like Trey Sermon and Tyler Goodson. What are we doing here? And they're just dicing up the Steelers. Gardner Minshew ends up being one of the right answers at quarterback in the first round of the fantasy playoffs.
And like, it's not like Gardner. I mean, I know that Gardner had a good game fantasy wise, but just like eye test wise, not a good game. Bunch of misfires. Again, he led Michael Pittman into that huge hit. There were some really regrettable throws from Gardner Minshew in that game. He just didn't pay for him and ends up with three touchdowns. McLaurin and Godwin like blowing up in the same week is just, that's just wild. Like I don't know where I would have pegged the odds of that. They're obviously both very good players. You couldn't have known going into the week that Chris Godwin was going to end up matched up with linebackers like all day, and they just picked on that. He was great. McLaurin was great, at least when Jacoby got in the game and Sam Howell left the game. Just a wild one. Yeah, you were probably favored. I mean, I don't know who's on your team, Brandon, but you were probably favored going into this thing by 20, 25 points. Like the projections for Minshew, McLaurin, and Godwin couldn't have been good.
No, couldn't have been good. I mean, obviously, if you listen to the recap show, you know my feelings about the Jacoby Brissett, Terry McLaurin stuff. I won't expand on that. I mean, good players can just be good if you use them. I don't know. The Chris Godwin thing is interesting. Did you see any of this stuff this past week about like his wife was on social media, like saying Todd Bowles was blatantly lying about the extent of Chris Godwin's injuries, when it's like, why hasn't he been getting the ball and stuff like that? So I don't know. Maybe we have a family member on social media narrative building here.
Oh, okay. I saw some of the headlines. Like, usually when a spouse is involved in the headlines, I don't know. I don't dive into those things. I don't click through those things. I know, like, Dalton does. Dalton really loves that stuff.
We'll obviously get a full breakdown from Dalton on the Stat Nerd podcast about the listen, if he was really doing his work, we would have gotten it last week. Okay, so thanks a lot, Dalton. But yeah, no, obviously that's Dalton's beat for sure. But I heard a few people mention it. I saw it like scrolling around on Twitter or whatever. But yeah, I mean, look, Chris Godwin's a good player, and Joe Barry, the defensive coordinator for the Green Bay Packers, doesn't seem to know that you can not cover the slot player with linebackers and safeties. And I mean, right. We've gone so beyond enough already territory with the Packers defense. Like, there's got to be some serious conversations in that building about what they're doing on that side of the ball, because they're going to end up wasting like a better than expected season from the offense because their defense can't stop a nosebleed. Not that Jordan Love is perfect. We know Jordan Love, like, we're still finding himself, all that type of stuff. But yeah, pretty embarrassing stuff by the Green Bay Packers. Final social media submission here. Mike on Twitter sends in a GIF of Taylor Swift saying, "It's me. Hi, I'm the problem. It's me," alluding to the lackluster performance from Travis Kelce. Taylor Swift is not the problem for Travis Kelce. Let's get that out of the way. By the way, shout out to Taylor for just like becoming a full-fledged football fan, you know, screaming at the refs.
Oh, hell yeah.
The F word at the ref. That's great. Shout out to Taylor Swift for becoming a full-fledged NFL fan. Radicalized so quickly into the life of the
screaming
NFL.
Screaming at the ref, by the way, after the most flagrant flop of week 15. like any contact that existed on that play was created by Travis Kelce, and he was playing for the flop and not really for the catch.
Yeah, well, hey, that's part of being an NFL fan, man, is you see things through the colored glasses of your own team. But it still hasn't been a great season from Travis Kelce. I mean, he's been good, right? Like, in fantasy, he's been fine. But has he been worth taking at the top of, you know, in the first round? Like, that's a guy that was taken in the first round. Sixth overall consensus ADP, according to 4 for 4. He's a tight end 3 on the season. He's played 13 games. Like, again, you look at his season-long numbers. Okay, 110 targets, 924 yards, 5 touchdowns. It's nothing disgusting. I mean, it's not Sam Laporta level, of course, the 9 touchdowns that Laporta's got to his name. It's not Laporta-esque, but it's fine. It's just, the thing with Travis Kelce is you don't pay for fine. So, Andy, if and when Kelce gets elevated high in drafts again next year, how are you going to approach that?
Yeah, I actually don't think, you know, and it depends a little bit on how this season ends up, but I don't think that's going to happen, because the point of Travis Kelce, and it's something I did in a handful of leagues. The point of Travis Kelce in the first round was he's a tier of his own player. And the gap between Travis Kelce and whoever you wanted to call the number two tight end was so great. And he was coming off a year in which he doubled up the scoring production of most fantasy tight. So you were paying for this positional edge that didn't, at least in theory, that didn't exist in any other spot. That's clearly not the case anymore, right? Like, he could still, it's close enough that he could still finish as the overall tight end one, but you don't need to reach for the overall tight end one when they score almost exactly like the tight end 2 and the tight end 3 and the tight end 4. The point of that was giving yourself this massive weekly edge. And I think, you know, where the Chiefs offense is right now, where Kelce himself is at this point in his career, it's unreasonable to expect another season that's like 1,500 yards and 12 touchdowns and 110 catches or what. I don't think we're getting that. And I don't know, the rest of the position is caught up a little bit, right? Isn't it? Aren't Hockenson and Laporta like right now 1-2 in some order, or tied, or really close, right? Like, they're right there. And Kelce's just behind them. So I don't know. There's kind of a, I don't know, there's a log jam, and we're gonna tier this position next year, and Kelce is not gonna be in a tier of one.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. And right now, yeah, it is your guy, Sam Laporta. By the way, I haven't acknowledged this yet, but you're wearing a Sam Laporta themed shirt for the YouTube audience here, if you want to show this off.
Oh, number one, it's so comfortable. Shout out to Homage. This is the, you know, the NFL does this thing every year where they have the incoming rookies from memory try to draw the team logo. and Sam did this hybrid Cookie Monster lion thing. He wrote Roar, so you know it's a big ferocious lion. It's a wonderful shirt. So comfortable.
I mean, it looks ridiculous. Those drawings are great, and I definitely make fun of it as much as everybody else, but if I had to do that, I would probably draw something that looked like that. I'm not the most artistically inclined person. So great shirt from you. Great season from Sam Laporta, who is the tight end one. TJ Hockenson is tight end two. And then, it is Travis Kelce there at three. They're the only three guys over 160 points. So, it's definitely a lesson to learn next year. I don't think Kelce is in that sort of tier of his own. Just to acknowledge us, many social submissions. And we got an email from Rich B. Wanted to shout you out. We're going to talk about Austin Eckler. Obviously, we're talking to Austin Eckler on the show tomorrow, so we don't want to spend a bunch of time talking about it here. So we'll talk about Eckler and what he thinks of his season on tomorrow's episode. But yes, want to acknowledge that I feel your pain out there. If you've been listening to Eckler's Edge this year, I have Austin Eckler in the Eckler's Edge League, and I didn't even make it to the damn playoffs. So for those of you that made it with Austin Eckler as your first round pick, shout out to you. But obviously it was a very painful ending, to the Brandon Staley era there in Los Angeles and to his fantasy season.
What an awkward game. Brutally obvious during the course of that game that Brandon Staley was not going to be the head coach of that team. 48 hours later, 72 hours later, whatever. And that's just so, that's such a lousy viewing experience. It's not even fun to make the jokes. That was a really, really painful watch. I also think, Austin himself is surely not going to say this before the end of the year, but I just legitimately feel like he's been playing through the ankle injury has just never gotten right, and he's been playing through it. To his credit, I don't know if he actually plays out the season at this point, because we're putting Justin Herbert on the shelf. We're resting Keenan Allen last week. I don't see the motivation for him necessarily finishing the season, but I respect the effort. I just think we're gonna get to the off season and we're gonna hear that it was a pretty significant injury that he was managing for most of the year.
Yeah, I'm sure that is the case as well. So just a reminder to all of you out there to submit for this segment next week on Sunday night / Monday morning during the fantasy postseason. We want to see the players that cost you your season. You can send in a video rant as our first submission did. That was awesome. You can send in a simple screenshot. Yeah, you can just rant to us in the email. I know we got a lot of Bijan Robinson ones that we did not get to. Okay, we couldn't just read off every Bijan Robinson email. So shout out to Kyle who got it in first and with a video. But again, you can send all this stuff to fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com, or you can tweet it at me or Andy Behrens, and we will highlight them in the Fantasy Forensic Files. Let's all cope together, people. That's what we're here for. Before we get to the waiver wire pickups, Andy and I still, for the fantasy playoff panic meter, we're going to give you one player team matchup we are most panicked about heading into week 16. So Andy, after digesting all of Sunday and Saturday's action and all the way back to Thursday, I mean, my God, lot of cope going on with the LA Chargers right now. who are you kind of panicking about in week 16?
Yeah, specifically for week 16. First of all, Jordan Love has kind of saved my ass in a couple of leagues where I've lost some pretty good quarterbacks, right? I have one where I lost Burrow, one where I lost Kirk Cousins, one where I lost Justin Herbert. And Jordan Love has been there for me. It's a little bit awkward because he's a Packer. That's not usually my thing, but he's been great. I am concerned. I'm not concerned about the opponent. He's got the Panthers coming up, and I know that the Panthers pass defense looks pretty good on paper. They're also a terrible team, and they're not, they don't stop the run. And usually these lopsided defenses are kind of fake. And I'm not overly concerned about the matchup. I am overly concerned about the fact that he probably doesn't have Christian Watson, and now Jaden Reed is hurt. And Jordan Love is good, but I don't know that he's the sort of quarterback that can overcome his two best receivers potentially missing in action in this one. So I'm a little bit worried about that. I don't have good, my options are Nick Mullins. I wish Jake Browning was an option. He's not, right? My options are terrible and I'm not going to pivot to them. So I'm going to go ahead and roll out Jordan Love. Maybe he can overcome it. He's still got Dobbs. I don't know. Tucker Kraft looks fine. Dontavian Wicks looks fine. But if Jaden Reed can't go, I am certainly concerned.
Yeah, Reed, obviously keep an eye on that. I will say they've been dealing with injuries in that room all year. Obviously, with Christian Watson, that's been an issue. Now, some of Love's best games have come when Christian Watson has been available, so we'll see about his status. But they did get Aaron Jones back, and I think you're underselling Wicks and Tucker Kraft a little bit. Those guys look awesome. Like, they have just hit on all of, for all of their failures. And some, and again, a lot of it is coaching, but some of their failures acquiring players on the defensive side of the ball, not maximizing those guys, they just unearth like a new young pass catcher every single week. Hilarious that they struggled to do this during the Aaron Rodgers era. And now it's like, oh, Jordan Love's here. Well, shoot, Dontavian Wicks, what a win. Both of the tight ends they drafted this year looked good. Jaden Reed looks like a friggin' star. And then obviously they got two pretty good players last year in Watson and Dobbs. Like, I think they have enough depth for you to survive, especially against the damn Panthers.
Yeah, I hope that's right. You're totally right on Tucker Kraft. That guy, like, he's not even getting volume, but he does something every week that just absolutely jumps off the screen. Sometimes it's like a negated play, but that guy's been he's been phenomenal.
Yeah, he really has been. I am going to put on the panic meter watch Travis Etienne going into Tampa Bay. Probably no Trevor Lawrence, who since we last spoke was placed in the NFL's concussion protocol. I think Brock Purdy's the only one to have a concussion and then play. I'm probably wrong on that. I shouldn't even say, but I typically, like, people have missed games after they've been placed in the protocol. So we'll see. If there's no Trevor Lawrence, that's obviously concerning. The entire Jags offense is concerning right now. Their running game is terrible. Yeah. Their running game is awful. And Todd Bowles in that defense isn't perfect. I do think getting Devin White off the field was a good thing for that Bucks defense against the Green Bay Packers. It's a guy that everybody knows. He was drafted high. He made some splash plays in the Super Bowl run, but he's not really like a reliable player. And it sounds like there's a falling out kind of coming there with Devin White and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But their run defense hasn't been typically what we're used to, but it's still, I think, a defense that can pitch one good game and kind of take down an offense. And look, Travis Etienne, again, he's just been living off like touchdown deodorant. How much touchdowns are they going to be scoring? How many touchdowns are going to be scoring in Tampa Bay this week? I'm concerned about that.
Yeah. Well, now you're really worrying me, because in one of the same teams that I have Jordan Love, I also have Travis Etienne. So I'm going to need one of these guys to produce. Right? Like, I can't. But I hear you with Etienne. It actually, like, it started out kind of promising for Etienne on Sunday night too, right? Like, the first quarter wasn't so bad. They were actually picking up decent, like, I don't know, normal yardage on his rush attempts. And then the other thing that has gotten messy for Etienne, and it, you know, this will not be in play if Trevor Lawrence can't go, but that just creates other problems, is that Lawrence himself has become kind of a goal line rushing threat. So, like, Etienne's season was perfectly fine fantasy wise when he was scoring each week, you know, it was one or two touchdowns each week for a little run there. And then, you know, the Jags remembered or realized for the first time that Trevor Lawrence is actually like a gigantic human being and a pretty good rushing quarterback himself and a pretty good option on the goal line. And it worked. So I actually worry long term that that's going to become a thing, and it's going to ding Etienne even further.
Yeah, just can't hang on to the ball, Trevor Lawrence. Great rushing
play,
just a little tiny issue. Travis Etienne hasn't averaged more than four. He's averaged more than 4 yards per carry just once since week five.
Yeah,
just once. Pretty brutal stuff. All right, with that, let's get the top five waiver pickups of the week, Andy. Some really potential nice names here headed down the stretch.
I'm recycling a few of these names from last week, because we're kind of in that stage of the season where, like, the roster percentages aren't going to move a ton, and the teams that are still alive and making moves are really, really good teams, right? And they may encounter positional needs, but probably not a lot. You know, it's you know, times are pretty desperate if you're actually going to the waiver wire for multiple players. So we're not going to see a lot of, you know, if somebody is in the 30s in terms of their roster percentage right now, they're probably not cracking 50 at any point for the balance of the season. So again, you will have heard some of these names before, but I think they're all still relevant. I'm going to start with Jake Browning. Just like another week, another 300-yard performance from him. He's got 7 combined touchdowns in his last 3 games. He's won all of them. He's about to face a Pittsburgh defense that is just reeling. They gave up 30 to Gardner Minshew and the Colts. So it's all of a sudden it looks like a pretty friendly spot. Obviously, it matters a lot if he's got Ja'Marr Chase on the field. There's no direct replacement for Ja'Marr Chase in that offense. Hopefully, Chase can play through this shoulder thing. That team has been a really fun story, and Browning has obviously passed the eye test. My number 4 is going to be Noah Brown, who just gave us 8 catches on 11 targets, a touchdown, 82 yards. He'd obviously been a dud in the previous couple weeks since coming back from injury, but it should certainly help him to get CJ Stroud back at the controls of that offense. Brown, a good player, not, you know, he's not Nico Collins, he's not Tank Dell, but he is somebody who in a secondary role, we've seen him have some big games so far this season. My number 3 is Chase Brown. I hope he's okay. He made a visit to the medical tent in week 15. I don't even know what it was about. He came back in the game. So hopefully he's fine. That guy is averaging 72 scrimmage yards per week since he came back from IR. He's seen about 10 touches a game. I think he was in for a much larger role in week 15, but he came off the field for a little while. Just absolutely explosive. This is no surprise to anybody who watched him play at Illinois last year, because he put up huge numbers against absolutely everybody on that team's schedule. Really gifted player. And if he falls into a role where he's routinely getting, you know, 12 touches, 14 touches, that's going to be a really exciting player, somebody that we think of as even more than a flex. I think we have to talk about Zamir White, who gave us like the proof of concept game that we needed, right? He was just kind of an idea coming into week 15. We'd seen him in the preseason. We'd hyped him before. We thought at one point that maybe the Raiders viewed him as their running back after Josh J. But like nobody knew anything because he'd barely played in the regular season. He was good. He did everything you might have expected against the Chargers in a, you know, relatively low degree of difficulty matchup, but 85 total yards, had a touchdown, had 20 touches. He's the guy they cared about at the goal line. So that's everything that you wanted to see. And if Jacobs can't go, Zamir White, obviously in line for a similar workload going forward. And then my number 1 is going to be Jerick McKinnon. We're actually seeing more Clyde Edwards-Helaire ads in the early going than McKinnon. And I get it, like CEH just had a good game, but Pacheco's probably coming back. Sounds like he's coming back, certainly trending toward that. The early reports had been, you know, he had this cleanup procedure, probably going to come back for week 16. If that happens, it takes a big chunk away from CEH. And I assume that he would then go back into a supporting role. McKinnon is kind of that circle of trust player for Patrick Mahomes, doesn't need a lot of touches because he gets them in the right spot on the field, right? Couple of touchdown, one of them weird, like a shovel pass touchdown to Rashee Rice on Sunday, and then a more legitimate touchdown later in the game. But we know what McKinnon can do on a pretty light workload. He was a pretty decisive player in fantasy last year, and I think he probably retains a role when Pacheco gets back.
Yeah, I think that's a good call, because Pacheco being back definitely sends CEH like back to the, you know, back to the bench for sure. So I think McKinnon can give you viable, you know, flex worthy starts down the stretch. Zamir White, yeah, what an encouraging run out for him. Hard to get any better than that. Not sure they'll be in that game script going forward, but he could end up being one of these like, we see it every year, right?
Yeah.
A couple of random running backs like win people championships, and that could certainly be Zamir White this year.
Yeah, it could also be Ty Chandler, who is barely not eligible for this conversation because he's a little bit over 50% right now. But Chandler's in the same situation. Also, definitely passed the eye test in relief of Alexander Mattison. And if you're in it, like if you happen to be in a league where he's available, he'd probably be my number 1 this week.
Yeah, I'd co-sign that. Stings that the couple leagues that I had Ty Chandler didn't make it to the playoffs. So didn't get to use him. Finally the game he erupts, of course. What a stupid game fantasy football is. And I think that's a perfect note to end this podcast on. What a dumb game, as all the people that sent in for the forensic files showed. Just so much misery.
Good full circle game. Work there, because we're leaving the pod with the message that, you know, Arthur Smith, who we began with, would want us to go out on, I think.
Yeah, the fantasy football is dumb.
Yeah.
So congratulations, Arthur. You win. Not the game. You didn't win the game. You're certainly not going to win the division. But you did win your battle against fantasy footballers. You beat people down into misery by you know, and the best part of all of it is like Bijan was on such a tear, like, wow, he has a workhorse role. Like Drake London's coming off his best game of the season. That's a perfect way for this season to end for the Atlanta Falcons from a fantasy perspective. Well, again, it's going to do it for this week. Make sure you send in all your pain and misery to the Fantasy Forensic Files next week. Tomorrow, we are back with Eckler's Edge, the final Eckler's Edge of the 2023 regular season. Obviously, we have a lot to talk about with Austin and kind of see where he's at this point with this season and going forward. You don't want to miss that. Until then, we're out.